This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean Podcast. In this episode, we listen to a talk Reggie offered on how to work with obstructive states of mind. He says that the Vajrayana approach of working with difficult emotions is likened to a mythical peacock transmuting poison. We make a direct relationship with the defiling emotion and free the inherent awakened energy. This talk is from Mahamudra for the Modern World, a 37-hour intensive training course produced by Sounds True.
So let's take a closer look at these kleshas. The term klesha is a Sanskrit one, and it means sticky thoughts, clinging thoughts, thoughts that are tied up with strong emotion. The Vajrayana tradition is interested in these very sticky thoughts or these very strong thoughts, these thoughts that are tied up with incredibly powerful emotions, not only because they tie us up and they lead us to get ourselves into all kinds of trouble, to be self-destructive, to be hurtful to other people, and not only because the kleshas themselves are masking or hiding the enlightened energy of the awakened state, and we need that energy in our lives to be creative, dynamic, engaging, fearless, and so on. But the Vajrayana is also interested in the kleshas because they are the fundamental building blocks of ego. They are emotional attitudes and structures and processes that develop very early in our life and become the driving force of our personality and of our ego. And ultimately, if we want to be truly free and not just engaged in a perpetual warfare, you know, with these emotions, always trying to deny them or push them out. If we want to be truly free, we have to actually dismantle our ego at its most fundamental level. If we don't attend to the kleshas directly, if we don't work with these sticky, powerful, potentially very destructive emotions, while we may be able to catapult ourselves into a state of non-thought or into an experience of the unborn mind, nevertheless, when we're operating in our lives, these fundamental, primary, primitive emotions, although they may be unconscious, are still going to be motivating us. They're still going to be driving us. And I'll give you an example. Sometimes we as spiritual practitioners find that we may, you know, spend a lot of time in retreat and our mind may be very peaceful much of the time, and we may feel often a sense of freedom from ego. But at the same time, there may be, often is, a kind of attitude of judgmentalism toward people who are not spiritual practitioners. That's an example of aggression, you know, judging them, putting them down. There may be a feeling of pride. There may be a subtle attitude of wanting more of the unborn mind, which is passion, not wanting the relative mind, which is aggression. So even though we may not be consciously aware, nevertheless, because we have not dismantled pride or passion or aggression back to their fundamental and pure energies, we are being nevertheless driven by them and controlled by them at a deep level. And we are, in fact, as spiritual practitioners, building up our spiritual ego. And we're back in the same, it's the same story. It's the same old egocentric, accepting, rejecting, and trying to maintain some kind of territory at a basic level. So the Vajrayana is very interested in the kleshas because, you know, you may be able to take care of all the other kinds of the moving mind, of mental occurrence, but if you're not able to handle and transform the kleshas, you're still stuck, you're still within samsara, and you haven't really freed yourself fundamentally. So what is the Vajrayana way of relating to the kleshas? How do we dismantle their perversion? How do we let go of the ego clinging and the manipulation that they imply? And how do we uncover the selfless wisdom that's underneath that provides the energy source? How do we do that? How do we free their awakened natural energy? There are several steps. Step number one is we need to do a lot of meditation in our life. You know, we need to have some daily meditation and hopefully periodically do programs that are retreat programs and individual retreats. We need, in short, to learn how to connect with, as we have been doing in this program, the basic nature. So we need to, in order to work with the kleshas, there needs to be this ground of discovering and resting in the natural state, looking at and pointing out the unborn mind, as we've been doing, is the way we do that in the Mahamudra tradition. We need to be able to connect with the fundamental vastness of our own state of being. And from that state of being, gradually we learn how to rest within its integrity and not to depart. And then we can work with the kleshas. And I'm not saying that right now we can't work with them fruitfully. Yes, we can, as we're going to see in a minute. But I want to emphasize that working with the kleshas, and indeed working with all of the aspects of the moving mind, really call us to deepen our relationship with the unborn mind, with the unconditioned mind, with the mind that is, you know, fundamentally open and boundless and free. And we do that through our practice, through the Mahamudra practice. Step number two in working with the kleshas is that when we are taken over by one of these very powerful primitive states of mind, such as anger, rage, whatever, we need to notice and acknowledge to ourselves that that actually has occurred, that we have been taken over. And it may seem like a fairly obvious thing, but actually it's not. Sometimes, no matter who we are, we're in a situation, something happens, we feel threatened, there's this reactivity that takes up, whether it happens to be, in the case of the dvesha, you know, the aggression or anger, something very powerful, or it could be something very subtle. Maybe somebody says something and suddenly we're irritated, and suddenly we don't like that person. Well, that's being taken over by a klesha. And so step number two is we have to actually realize that's what's happened, because you can't work with it till you know it's happened. Step number three is we need to step back enough to realize that the energy is happening and that we actually need to relate to the situation and not just be carried along by its sort of neurotic tidal wave. Number four is that we actually need to do the specific Mahamudra practices that liberate the kleshas. We need to do the practices and be that peacock that is eating the poison, that's consuming or relating to these potentially very damaging and from an ordinary viewpoint, very poisonous and threatening mental states. We need to do the practices that transmute them and transform them into enlightened energy. And again, in a minute we're going to do this, but right now, just to mention, we turn toward the klesha with our awareness. We turn toward the anger. We open to it. We look directly into it. We feel into it. We listen to it. We taste it. We smell it. We touch it. Our approach is very soft. It's very non-confrontational. There's a sense of feeling and sensing the klesha as a living energy that is basically imprisoned. So, strange to say, we are approaching a klesha much as we might approach a lover, where there is a tremendous sense of respect for this living energy of the klesha, and a tremendous sense of softness and kindness toward the living energy that is locked up in this apparently poisonous and threatening emotion. When we are in the presence of our anger, our paranoia, our hunger, there needs to be a feeling that we are in the presence of something very sacred and that we are engaging in a work that is deeply meaningful and transformative and is going to be liberating not only to ourselves but to the people around us. The environment of the practices is artificial, admittedly, and in the practices we're about to do, I'm going to ask you to try to generate a particular defiling emotion, and I'm going to try to help you do that so that there can be some experience of being angry or being passionate, whatever it may be. We need to practice in this artificial environment because when the klesha actually comes up in our life, whether we're sitting on the cushion or we are engaged in the world, it's so powerful that if we don't train ourselves initially in an artificial way, when the klesha actually turns up, we're not going to be able to work with it. It's just too much. So please don't be put off by the artificial nature of this particular practice. It's getting you ready so that you can do it when you're alive in the world, engaging people in situations, and when it sort of overwhelms you when you're doing your meditation. Another thing I want to mention is that the practices that we're going to do relate to the kleshas as single emotions, for example, anger, passion, pride, and so on. But in fact, the upwelling of the kleshas is usually a composite of all of them. You know, it's never really that simple. For example, when we're, in my case of my own life, when I was very, very hurt, that was passion. When I was afraid that hurt was going to overwhelm me and destroy me, that's paranoia. Out of that, there was a feeling of being rejected, which is, a sense of ignorance, because, of course, I wasn't being rejected, but my mother wasn't available in the same way. That led to anger, and then the pride of trying to hold myself together. So, you know, in that situation, actually, even though anger was the most obvious klesha and has been, you know, through my life, I would say actually passion was the basic one. The love of my mother and the feeling of hurt when that love was frustrated and the love object wasn't available. And then the rest of them all kind of were supporting cast members of the lead role of passion. So in actual fact, the kleshas are quite composite, but we're going to work with them one by one as, again, part of this somewhat artificial training so that then we can handle them more expeditiously and skillfully when they actually come up in life. And the other thing I want to mention just in closing is the training in the kleshas helps us work with all the aspects of moving mind, even including thoughts. The reason for this is that whatever situation we are in life, when we are working from our small self, whether it's subtle moods and attitudes or whatever it may be, or even a thinking process or a dream, there's always some kind of underlying emotionality that is driving us, even if it's very subtle. And I'll give you one example. The other day I was sitting and meditating, and I set aside an hour, and at the end of the hour I was going to make myself some tea, and I suddenly found myself with a kind of hunger toward the tea, and it was in my mind, and I was sort of leaning toward the tea, and I realized that even though it was incredibly subtle, and I wasn't really thinking about it, nevertheless, there was this thread of passion toward the tea going on, and I was able to remember the training in the kleshas, and I just turn my mind to the idea of the tea and the kind of yearning that was in it, even though it was extraordinarily subtle, and look into it. And I realized that working with that was the same thing as working with a very heavy-duty klesha. So working with the kleshas and training them is going to give us a way to work with any conditioned state of mind that even on a very, very subtle level takes us over. Another example would be we're sitting and we're having a lot of thoughts and we find ourselves yearning for an open and empty state, and we're kind of caught by the yearning. At that point, we can do the klesha practice. We can turn our mind. We can see that we've been taken over by yearning for peace. We can put our mind directly to the yearning. We can look into it. We can open to it. And through the practices I'm about to show you, we can free ourselves from that subtle imprisonment. I think you can see from this whole presentation of the kleshas that what we're talking about here is that the kleshas themselves, when they come up, become a gateway back to the freedom and the openness of the enlightened mind. When we consider the fact that any aspect whatsoever of the moving mind does in fact offer the opportunity in the Vajrayana, including the kleshas, right on the spot in the immediate situation to open back into the awakened state, we see how powerful this tradition can be potentially. There's nothing that can ever happen in our experience, however the sophisticated the thought or however fundamental and primitive the emotion, that doesn't become a gateway. In this sense, we can free ourselves not only when we're sitting on the meditation cushion and opening up the unborn mind and the natural state. We can free ourselves in any and every situation of life simply by turning to and knowing how to work with whatever relative aspect has arisen in our experience.
To download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Ketchog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.